Hello and welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis, and we have arrived at a milestone. Episode number 100. You know, when I started this podcast, I didn't know where it would go. I didn't know what it would develop into. But I'll say this, I have had a lot of fun. I have gotten to talk to a ton of different coaches, players, broadcasters, legends, Hall of Famers. I have been very, very blessed. More importantly, they're just great people, people who have volunteered their time, taking time out of their schedules. That's kind of cool. And my dad always said this, and I'm sure you've heard it too, life is all about relationships, right? You don't know when or where you're going to see these people and bump into them, or they may call you, you may call them, but it's the relationships you build and the list of people that you influence you and maybe you influence them that really change your life and are a part of your life. That's what it's all about. So, you know, thanks to all the great guests, more importantly, you know, people who I consider friends, colleagues, of course, thanks to my guy, Tasso Stefanidis, for kicking me in the ass to do a podcast 3.5 or 3 years ago. You know, thanks to all the media relations people who have had to deal with me and my requests, and they're the ones helping to negotiate and set up some of these interviews that I've had. And thanks to all of you for downloading and listening since 2021. We've grown this podcast together. I will keep growing it. So toast a glass, lift it up. Here's to the first 100. And now here's to the next 100. So thank you. We, of course, are sponsored by, and I have to throw this in there, the North Jersey Vipers Softball Club. They're one of the premier softball clubs in all of New Jersey, NorthJerseyVipers.com. All right, my guest this week is a head coach who's no stranger to the Tri-State. In fact, he spent a large chunk of his life in Connecticut, even though he grew up in South Carolina. The head coach of the 2024 Northeast Conference regular season co-champions, your Central Connecticut Blue Devils, Patrick Sellers. Coach, congrats on the regular season title. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Honored to be here.
It's an honor to have you on, Coach. You have done quite an amazing turnaround at your alma mater. All right. You played at Central Connecticut. You were captain of the 91 team. You were an assistant there. And now it's all come full circle. In just 3 years, you have brought a regular season banner back to Central Connecticut for the first time since 2007. So what does that mean to you?
You know, it's just, you know, excitement, happy to come back home, so to speak, and like be a part of a program that, you know, that I've is near and dear to my heart. And I played here. When I played here, we weren't very good. But when I came back as an assistant coach with Coach Dickerman, you know, Anthony Latina, Steve Pike, or Chris Casey, we had some really, really good teams. And so that was my introduction to coaching. My first year ever coaching college basketball, I was on a 25-win team with Coach D and Pykel and Latina. And we had our best, you know, player of the year, Rick Mickens. It was just a wonderful beginning to my career. And that's all I knew. Anthony, that's all we knew. And, you know, we realized it's hard to win in Division One. And, you know, over the years, now you learn all the work and hard blood, sweat, and tears it takes to get to get a championship or whatever. And even a regular season, you know, we still have a long way to go, but a regular season title is just exciting to bring back to Central Connecticut. That's what, you know, that's how we think about this program. We think we should be one of the top teams in this league all the time, and just happy to be a part of it.
Hey, you were making the transition, you know, from Division II to Division I back in the late 80s and into the 90s, and Central was trying to figure itself out. Howie Dickerman put Central Connecticut on the Division I map. That is some coaching tree. You know, I know Howie coached under, of course, Jim Calhoun, but you talk about four outstanding coaches, Chris Casey at Fairfield and Steve Pikel at Rutgers, Anthony Latina at Sacred Heart, and yourself, that's a pretty good coaching tree right there, coach.
I say it all the time. I was lucky. I was playing over in Europe. I came back from Europe and I started coaching high school at St. Thomas Aquinas. And Coach Pikes played with my brother Rod at UConn. So I grew the new Pico, through my years of playing. And then he would always invite, come over to practice, come over, bring your team over to practice. So I would come to practice, take notes, and Coach Steve would talk to Coach D all the time, and they had a opening here, and Pike said, "Pat, just hang around. I can get you in here. You played here. You deserve to be here," whatever. And I credit to Steve, he pushed for me really hard. And Coach D and my brother are really close. Coach D believed in me because of my brother, and I got the opportunity. And like you said, just working with great guys, and it started with Coach D. Coach D is just a relentless worker. He taught us how to work. He taught you how to recruit, how to do scouting reports, how to work guys out, how your team should defend, everything. So you learn every little detail of a basketball program. And that was my experience. And that's why I think, I've had such a really good career. Anthony has had a good career. Coach Casey, Steve Pico, we all learn from Howie Dickin.
And you talk about coaches who know defense and are tough coaches. Their teams are tough and hard nosed. Those must have been some tough practices that you witnessed as
Oh,
an assistant.
yeah, I will tell you this. Anthony and I still talk to this day. Our first practice here, it was 3 hours of bloodbath. Box out drills, rebounding, loose ball drills, all over for 3 hours. We come back downstairs to our office and we both sit at our desk and we're looking at each other like, what did just happen here? We couldn't believe it. It was like, is this what it's going to be like every day? It was a bloodbath. And, Coach D promoted toughness, like you said, hard nose, hard work. And it was everybody. The coaches, you had to be tough. You had to work hard. The players, you had to work hard. And if you didn't pull your weight, you weren't going to be here long. And that's how I grew up. That's how we grew up. And I think it's carried over all the years. I've been coaching many different places under a lot of different head coaches with a lot of different philosophies, but I still go back to my base coming from Central Connecticut with Coach D. That's where
See
it
that?
started.
Yeah. And you know what? Anthony and I speak regularly. He told me the same story, almost verbatim. So
Yeah.
you just verified exactly what happened. I wasn't sure if Anthony
Yeah.
was stretching the truth, but you
Right.
told it exactly the way he told it.
Telling you, it was unbelievable. And I'll tell you this right here. I don't know if you told you this one. So our first year, we won the regular season conference championship. We go to the NCAA tournament. We play Iowa State in the first round. We were a 15 seed, which is pretty good for our league. Play Iowa State.
Who'd they have at the
We
time?
tied the game. That was Marcus Fizer and Jamal Tinsley.
Oh,
Had a really good
gee,
team.
what a team.
And a big time team. And we tied the game with like 5 minutes to go. John Tice makes a three to tie the game. And we're like, the crowd's going nuts for us. Get ready to upset a two seed. And we were going under on ball screens on Tinsley all game. He steps behind a screen and makes a three. We had a quick turnover. And all of a sudden, a tied game became 5 points just like that. And we ended up losing the game. But I mean, great game. Anyway, so now you fast forward to the next year. So the next year, we had a that summer we had the team banquet and everything like that. But the next year we were ready to go again, and we have our first day of practice, which is a bloodbath, like brutal. Got a lot of guys coming back to that team, and our championship rings came in right around the first day of practice. So we go 3 hours of practice. We go to the weight room for another 45 minutes. These guys are gassed. They're cramping up. They're dehydrated, everything. Coach D says, "All right, everybody in the locker room, get in your chips." So they're all sitting down in the locker room, hunched over, exhausted. He comes out. He brings out the rings. So he gives out the rings. "You earned it." He's shaking their hand. "You earned it. Good job. You earned it." Meanwhile, these guys could barely stand up. They were so tired. We always
First
laugh about
practice.
that, man. Glad the first practice. Unbelievable.
Great
Yeah.
stories, coach. Great stories. So
Oh,
all of these experiences that you've had, even after Central Connecticut, right? You've coached at some great programs, winning programs. You've been to NCAA tournaments as an assistant, later coached at UConn, Fairleigh Dickinson, Creighton, right? What do you take from all of these experiences at these programs in the postseason as you get ready to prepare for this postseason with Central over the next, hopefully, three games and beyond?
Yeah, you know, I was, you know, we met with the staff yesterday and we were just talking about practice for today's practice and, mm-hmm. and beyond. And I kind of just said, hey, man, you know, when I was at Creighton, whenever we got to this point, Coach Mack would do this. When I was at UConn, Coach Calhoun would do this. And, you know, Coach D, we would do this. So I kind of try to take a little bit of from everybody. Greg Herenda, who I co-worked with at Fairleigh Dickinson, great guy. He won two championships in this league, and he had a certain way he did things. So, you know, we talked about how we approached these couple practices in the first game, and we kind of pick what we like, and then we just go with it. And that's, you know, I kind of take a little bit from everybody. And even during the year, if you come to a practice, you'll see bits and pieces of UConn when we work on our transition stuff. You'll see some stuff we did at FDU with Coach Herenda. You'll see a lot of offensive stuff that we did at Creighton. And then Fairfield, I was talking to Jay Young the other day, some of the stuff we did defensively at Fairfield, we do here. So, yeah, I'm taking pieces from everybody.
I bet. And you came from Fairfield before you took this head coaching job 3 years ago, and you were able to recruit a pretty big-time player from Fairfield who you had a relationship with that came over here for his graduate year in Gene Allen Rose.
Allen Gene Rose, yeah.
Allen, you know, I can't get Allen it right. These three names. Allen Gene Rose.
Allen Gene Rose, yeah, yeah.
I'm just using all three names there. I'm sorry. Allen Gene Rose. So what did it mean to get him to come from Fairfield and play for you his graduate year?
Yeah, so Allen Gene Rose got to Fairfield. He got there. We got there at the same time. So what happened, Jay had a open scholarship late in the recruiting process when he had just got the job at Fairfield. He goes to see Allen Gene Rose the last day of the recruiting period. 6'7" guy, long, pretty good offensive player, good athlete. Didn't know much about him. One of his buddies told him about him, saw him, liked him, offered him a scholarship, and he took it. So he took the scholarship, and then 2 weeks later, I got hired at Fairfield. So, you know, he's a freshman, and all the freshmen, he was one of the guys, come in the office, let's talk, let's get in the gym, let's work out. He's all hyped up. And so we just developed a relationship over time. We got so close his freshman and sophomore year. And I said this all the time, in 25 years of coaching, the spring after his sophomore year, we had just went to the MAC Conference Championship game. We lost to Iona. He had a decent sophomore year, and we took a couple weeks off, and then we started our postseason workouts. His postseason workouts were some of the best workouts I've ever been involved with in a player in 25 years. He was great. He figured it out. He started shooting the ball better, handling it, passing, post up. You could tell he was starting to develop into the player we thought he could be. And then a couple weeks later, I get the job at Central Connecticut, so I leave. But during the whole time, I would always say, you got to keep this thing up, keep it going, texting him. He had some big games. I would text him after every game or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. And some days he had bad games. I would call him or whatever and talk to him. So at the end of last year, he had 10 points, 5 rebounds. He had a really good senior year, but he had the COVID year left. So he went to talk to Jay and said, I'm going to put my name in the portal. And I was kind of shocked that he was doing it. But I called Jay to see if it was okay if we called him because, you know, we had a scholarship open. So he said, yeah, I don't know. He said, maybe he needs a change. And it just worked out perfect. Came here. I told him, I said, you know, we're going to get put the ball in your hands a little bit more. You'll get more opportunities here to make plays or whatever. And if you're open, shoot threes. So he came here. I told him, we're not going to blow you away with the facilities. you know, Fairfield has a beautiful arena now, so we're not going to blow you away with that. But I said, I think you really like the way we play basketball, and you'll like our culture. And so he came here, met the guys, and he's fit in from day one. And he's, you know, the people at Fairfield love him, but the people here at Central Connecticut, they love him too. He's a really, really good person, really good person.
And what may I ask you, what is he studying for his graduate work?
He's doing a master's in marketing.
Okay.
Yeah. So he should be done by the end of the summer.
That's
He'll have his
fantastic.
master's degree. Yeah.
Central has a very good business program, near and dear to my heart because so many of my brother, my sister went there, my brother-in-law, my cousins, they all studied business. So
Yeah. Yeah.
very good
I got
business.
my degree in accounting here. So
There you go.
I,
There you, and what do you do? Do you do your own taxes, coach? Can I ask you that?
well, you know what? Back in the days when I was a student here, I used to do my taxes, and I did together on the team taxes. And now I have an accountant. Now I don't do it. It's past me now. No, but I did it back in the
I'm sure. Did you get a little money from these guys or, a
I
little
used
beer
to, yeah,
money
hey,
or
fellas, give
something?
me a couple bucks, man. A couple bucks. Buy me a beer at the bar. We'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. I like it. I like it. So now, coach, you have a senior laden team here. It's an experienced team. You were predicted second in the preseason poll behind Sacred Heart. Merrimack's right there with you, but this team is built to win now with the players you have. So how about the way, the upperclassmen have stepped up and led this team to where you are now?
Yeah, you know, it's so 3 years ago when we got the job here, we brought in eight newcomers, seven freshmen, and one transfer. And four of those guys are still here. So those guys are all juniors. So those guys are the core of the culture. They're everything that we're about.
You've
So
kept them
Devontae's,
together. I'm sorry, you
I
kept
kept,
them together.
yeah, we kept those four
Not
guys
easy.
together. And then we brought in a couple transfers in the meantime and some freshmen in the meantime. And so the guys we brought in, we vet them pretty good. We want, obviously we want to be good basketball players, but we want good people. We want really good people. We have eight guys that were 3.0 or better this past semester. They go to class, they're on time, they work together. I tell them all the time, you're in college, you're supposed to go and have a good time. Have a good time, do the right thing. So these guys, knock on wood, we haven't had any off-court issues. These guys are really good guys. And so it just so happened now that the guys we brought in, Kellen Amos is now a fourth-year guy. Trey Breland is a fifth-year guy. Alan Jean Robes, obviously, a fifth-year guy. And Jordan Jones is a fourth-year guy. So we wanted it that way. We wanted some guys out of the portal with a little older, a little age on them. And because those guys have been around now, they know defense, they know offense, they know terminology. So it's really, really helped us because we can do stuff on the court defensively. And I've had a number of times this year where we have a certain coverage on defense and we're in the timeout talking about it. And these guys said, Coach, I think we can do this. Alan Jean Rose has done it. Jaylen Brown has done it. Jordan Jones has done it. That we've changed the coverage in the timeout and went on the court and executed it. So, these guys, just because they're more mature guys, freshman guys want to have the confidence to talk, speak up, and talk about it. But these guys, they know what they're doing. So that's why it's been so good to coach these guys.
And I'll say this, it's a credit to you too, coach, that you're willing to, in that short period of time, listen to them and say, okay, let's try that.
Right. Well, so I say this all the time. Jaylen Brown, who's a junior, I think he has the highest basketball IQ on our team. So we'll be in practice and we'll be working on our defense and they'll do something on the court and he'll steal the ball or he'll make a play on it or whatever. And he'll just look over at me kind of shaking his head like, and we'll both go like this. You have that IQ, I know what you're doing. So no, I just got some really good guys. They're older, they're mature. So it's fun to coach. I was able to coach in China. When I was in China, obviously
Really?
you're coaching. We had three guys that were NBA level guys, a couple guys that played in the NBA.
Wow.
So I'm on the court and we're talking about, hey, late clock, late shot clock. They're going to run this ball screen. What do you guys like here? And they would tell me, hey, we did this when I was with Charlotte Hornets. We did this when I was with the Pelicans. We did this. So I was able to play around with some things while I was over there, and it just worked out for me. So now, having older guys, it's just a pleasure to coach these guys.
So you talk about all these, the memory is really good that you have, and you talk about a play here or a defensive scheme here. Like, do you have written notes or books of plays and things that you resort to? Are you old school?
Well, every place I've been, everybody does a video playbook, or they have the playbook kind of done up in a, I got a boxes full of plays. And then again, creating with McDermott. McDermott's the best offensive coach I've ever been around. So I have a big binder full of plays that they do. And then sometimes I'll just go online and watch them now, because he put some new stuff in now, and I'm just watching and like, man, I love that. So I can give him a call or whatever, and we'll talk about it. But I got a little portfolio of stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, it's an encyclopedia, right? You got to keep gathering, and that's great that you can rely on that you have that Rolodex too, of people that you can just call up and refer to at any point in time. So, Coach, as you're approaching the postseason tournament, you get St. Francis. You're the one seed. They're the eight seed. You beat them twice during the regular season, but that second time was a nail biter at home on your court, where you had to come up with a late stop defensively and hang on for a 1-point win.
They're well coached. Coach Kremel, Rob played in this league. I mean, he's been a head coach there for probably over 10 years. He's a really good coach. They do a good job. They came here, and we were out of sorts. We had a good stretch in the first half. We took it to double digits, and they just kept at it, kept at it, kept at it. They have a lot of freshmen. And these guys are fearless. One of the guys, Elijah Wilborn, is from Middletown, like right down the street from us. And I've, he had a big following here. So it's going to be, I know they're HC, but they're a really, really good team, explosive. And again, I can't stress, they're really well coached. They can shoot the ball. Wilborn gives them a big rim protector inside. He's strong. And then Carlos Lopez, a guard, who actually one of my college teammates coached in high school. He's a really good player too. He's averaging 20 points a game versus Carlos Lopez. So yeah, it's going to be a tough task. We got a tough task in front of us on Wednesday.
So, how do you like the way your team is playing right now? One of the hottest teams in the conference. You won four games in a row and six of seven. Does any of that carry over into the postseason? Does any of that matter right now?
It does. I like that. Like I showed these guys some film today of some of the good things that we're doing offensively. Like when we in the half court offense, when we really share the ball, we've been saying, get the ball from point A to point B. That's simple. When we do things simple, good things happen for us. And I've been saying this probably for a month now. We're on the quest for the complete game. So we've had a couple games this year where we were really locked in and really good on defense, and we held them to a low percentage on defense. We got the ball out in transition, scored in transition. We would get in a half court. We run really good stuff on the half court offense. We score in the half court. We have a good a lead at halftime. We come out in the second half, and there'll be a letdown, or be vice versa. We don't play well in the first half, and we come out in the second half a lot better. So we're trying to get a complete game. And we've been like I said after the game on Saturday, I said, "Fellas, here's the line for a complete game. We still have a long ways to go. We got to keep pushing that needle. We're trying to get to a complete game. So when we can get 44 minutes of what I think is really good Central Connecticut defense, get out in transition, and then if we don't get anything in transition, share the ball and get it from side to side on each side of the floor." I think we can do some good things. We could surprise people how good we can be, but we're searching for that complete game right now.
So, what is the most important thing? Can you pinpoint one thing this time of year that really you like to stress more than others?
It's our defense and the rebounding. The two things. It's
Okay.
defense and rebounding. We got to defend and rebound, and if we do that enough, it'll give us opportunity on the offensive end. We've played a number of 1-point games this year, and I would say our offense has just been okay, but we've hung on to win those games because we defended. And so we can defend and rebound the basketball. I think it will give ourselves a chance to be in the game all the time.
See that? I wish I had some eligibility, coach. You're my kind of coach. I played for Joe Riley. I hate to say this, but I'm going to bring it up. All right. You coached at St. Thomas Aquinas. That was one of our rivals. I played at South Catholic High School for a legendary coach, Joe Riley.
Yes.
And it was defense and rebounding. That is what I was born and bred on. So
my first year at St. Thomas Aquinas, we scrimmaged Newington. Coach Riley was at Newington at the time.
Yes.
We scrimmaged Coach Riley, and I sat there before the scrimmage for a good half an hour. And then after the scrimmage, I sat down and just kind of picked his brain. Just wanted to get as much knowledge as I could from Coach Riley.
Did you really? Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. No, he, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Just a legend, and so many great, players played for him, and his sons, Joe and Luke, are doing very well right now. No doubt.
Yeah.
Hey, and speaking of, brotherly, family love, how about your brother, Rod? UConn fans remember him very well. What's he up to?
Yeah, Rod. He's been up here a few times. He every year he comes up with a high school point guard and my cousin. We all played in high school together. They'll come up every year to come see a game here on a Saturday, and then they'll go to a UConn game either Saturday evening or Sunday. So they do that. So they came up to our game when we played Wagner, and the UConn was honoring in 2004 national championship team. So he was up for that game. And then he came to New York when we played at Wagner. So he came to that game too. So he's been up a couple of times. He lives in Atlanta, has four kids. His oldest is graduating from LSU this year.
Wow.
He has a one who's a freshman at Florida A&M, and he has a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's all
God
over
bless
the place.
Him. God bless him. I'll tell you what, it's making me feel old. I mean, we're all the same age, you and I and Rod and guys that I remember watching in college, and now here we are, adults and doing adult things with children and people under us. Congratulations, Pat. This has been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it big time.
So good luck in the tournament. We'll be following you. And if you get to the NCAA tournament, now you don't want to think about this, but if you get to the NCAAs and bring Central Connecticut back there, I'd love to have you back on again.
Sounds good. I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan.
All right, Patrick Sellers. Man, I had a lot of fun talking with him. And every one of those assistants, I've had the pleasure of talking with all four of those Howie Dickeman assistants. Chris Casey, Anthony Latina, Patrick Sellers, and of course, Steve Peichel. All of them have been on this podcast, and all of them are not only great coaches, but great people, great interviews. If you get a chance to listen to any of those podcasts, go check them out. They have really been some of the most fun podcasts and fun conversations I have had. Now add Patrick Sellers to that list. Northeast Conference Tournament kicks off Wednesday. Number one versus number eight, Central Connecticut versus St. Francis. You have number two seed Merrimack taking on LIU. You have number three seed Sacred Heart taking on Wagner. And you have number four seed Lemoyne taking on the five seed Fairleigh Dickinson. It is always wide open. Merrimack is the defending champion. Of course, they were not eligible to go to the NCAA tournament last year. And FDU, who was runner-up and took the baton all the way to the second round with a huge upset, one of the biggest upsets you'll ever see in the NCAA tournament, when they knocked off number one seed Purdue. For my money, it was the biggest upset in NCAA tournament history. But that is the past. This year, it could be any one of those teams. For my money, Merrimack and Sacred Heart and Central Connecticut, one of those three teams. I will be surprised if one of those three teams does not win at all, but you never know in the wide open Northeast Conference tournament. All right, so thanks to Patrick Sellers. And now we will go around the tri-state. Let's begin with UConn, the best team in the country, solidified their ranking as the best team in the Big East. They are now 16-2. They are your Big East regular season champs for the first time in 25 years since 1999, outright Big East regular season champs. And they did it emphatically on senior night, capping off a perfect 16-0 season at home. Gamble and the XL Center, their first home perfect season since 2006. I'm just throwing out all the stats here because it is just incredible. Dan Hurley, what he did taking this team from, you know, the middle of the pack. I've said it before. He took them out of purgatory along with Val Ackerman when they gave UConn another invite to come back to the Big East. That invitation, combined with Dan Hurley's hiring, has brought us to where we are today. As Dan Hurley once said, it's coming. You better get us now because it's coming. Well, we knew what he meant. And look at what he's done. National championship, number one ranking, Big East regular season champions. The only thing left on that list is a Big East Coach of the Year and a Big East Tournament Championship. Both of those could be forthcoming in the next week to 10 days. They will be the prohibitive favorites, especially if Tyler Kolek and his oblique injury lingers into the middle of March and beyond. Something to look out for there. All right, UConn is chasing history now. No team has ever gone 18-2 in the Big East since they've gone to a 20-game regular season schedule. All right, the most wins ever were last year by Marquette going 17-3 when they played 18 games. Villanova went 16-2. Right now, UConn is 16-2 with two games left. At Marquette, without Kolek, and at Providence, as we know, who's reeling. And suddenly they are off the tournament bubble and they're trying to regroup. We know that that will be a tough environment. We know the fans will be loud. It's a rivalry, but we'll see what Providence team shows up and we'll see how motivated UConn is to try to win their last two regular season games and go 18-2. But what they did to Seton Hall was just, it was just methodical. It was impressive. You know, they beat them inside. And then after they beat them inside, they hit some three-point shots. Tristan Newton got hot. Cam Spencer didn't even score until the second half. Donovan Klingon was the MVP of that game, in my opinion. We knew he'd be motivated after he, you know, missed a good chunk of the game in that loss to Seton Hall earlier this year at the Prudential Center. 19 points, 11 rebounds, 5 blocks. Stephon Castle, who's just a completely different player than he was in December. I mean, he has found his role with this team. He is excelling. He tied his season high, his career high with 21 points. Earlier in the year, UConn was a team that was, you know, finding its way. Klingon was injured, dinged up. Tristan Newton, it was his team. It was Caravan's team. And it was Spencer's team. But now you're just, you know, they're deeper than ever. Stephon Castle is playing like a lottery pick that he is. Solo Ball, just everyone. Hassan Diarra might be sixth man of the year, right? They're just getting contributions after contributions, and they are rolling. Dan Hurley said on my last podcast, we are in championship mode, and that's exactly what is going on there. So they win the regular season. And they're just, the Huskies are rolling. And did you see what happened after the game? Dan Hurley celebrated like a Hurley knows how with the people, with the students. He goes to a local watering hole that's famous on the UConn campus, if you've ever been there, named Ted's, celebrating with his family and celebrating with his son, Andrew Hurley, who by the way, hit the last point of the season. The last shot that was taken, it was a free throw after he had missed the first free throw. Andrew Hurley knew that he was trying and dying to score on senior day. likely his last home game ever at UConn. And it was Andrew Hurley who hit the last shot, the last free throw, the last point. Cool moment there for the Hurley family. After that shot, Dan turned around and looked up to Bob Hurley Sr. and gave him a fist bump and big smiles for that Hurley family. So what does Dan do after the game? Goes into Ted's, high-fiving everybody, and just celebrating with the UConn fans. Very cool moment. But they know a lot of work has yet to be done. Check another one off. Big East regular season title as they go for the Big East tournament title next week and a chance to make history as they round out the regular season. So that's UConn. On the other side, it's Seton Hall. And what do we make of Seton Hall? Because this is a team that when they lose, boy, do they lose, right? We give them credit, and we give them all the credit in the world for winning 5 Big East games on the road, because only the teams at the top do that. So the fact that they have done that and won at places like Butler and Providence, which are notoriously tough places to win, give them credit. But at the same time, when this team loses, I mean, it's by 20 points, 18, 30. They just get blown out by an average of 23 points this year. So they go to Creighton, get crushed. They go to UConn, get crushed. And now they're sitting here at 11-7 with an opportunity with 2 home games left to still control their own destiny. So to all of the Seton Hall fans that have, you know, claimed this team is unwatchable, I can't stand this team. They drive me crazy. Okay. Did you remember that they were predicted 9th in the preseason poll? Did you remember that they weren't even predicted to play meaningful games in March, that the season should have been over by now? Everything is there. Did you forget that they just beat Butler by double digits and they just beat Xavier by double digits on their home court? This is a damn good team at home. Yes, they're wounded. Yes, they're questioning their toughness. They're questioning their mental toughness and their fortitude. I will be surprised. I will be shocked if they don't come out ready to play against Villanova. This is a Villanova team that has beaten them 8 straight times. This is a Villanova team that has owned them for the better portion of 10 years. This is a Villanova team that stopped Seton Hall in 2020 on their home court from winning the outright Big East regular season title. Beat them on senior night, okay? And Seton Hall finished that year in 2020 in the regular season with a loss at home to Villanova and then got absolutely destroyed at Creighton. So then they had to share the Big East regular season title. And we all know what happened after that when they were one of the prohibitive favorites to maybe win the Big East tournament championship and maybe make a deep run that they hadn't seen in years, and COVID hit. So that season didn't end too well. And it was Villanova that cost them the regular season title. And last year, when Villanova supposedly had a down team, all right, they came into the Prudential Center with Seton Hall still clinging to an outside chance that they were going to make the NCAA tournament. It was Cam Whitmore and it was Eric Dixon, of course, doing a job against Seton Hall on their home court and once again leading them to the opposite side, the wrong side of the bubble. So which Seton Hall team will show up? The team that has lost by 20 points or more too many times this year on the road in the Big East? Or a team that fights and scratches and comes out hard and comes out fast and confident at home? A team that really it's their time to stick it to Villanova. We know it's going to be a loud crowd. We know there's going to be a lot of Villanova fans there. We know it's going to be a great atmosphere. Seton Hall has an opportunity to beat Villanova and beat DePaul and solidify their spot as an at-large team in this NCAA tournament. An opportunity for a sixth quad one wins. And as of this recording, there are only 14 teams in Division I that have at least six quad one wins. 14 of what is it? 360-something teams? So that's select company. I don't care what your net says. Six quad one wins will do something to boost your net. So right now their net may be a 68, but beat another quad one team on your home floor where you'll likely be an underdog, let's face it, and then beat an awful DePaul team who will likely make history with their 20th loss and become the first 0-20 team in Big East history. Take care of business, and you're more than likely, most likely, in the NCAA tournament. But I'll tell you what, it's not going to happen if Kadari Richmond plays with his head up his ass like he did for several minutes of that Creighton game and for several minutes in that UConn game. Seton Hall needs the motivated Kadari Richmond, the one who plays downhill, the one who is impossible to defend one-on-one. They need Alamir Dawes to shoot well and play like the senior leader he is, because we know Dre Davis is going to bring it. We know what he brings every single game, all right? That is your Big East most improved player of the year. He is Seton Hall's unsung hero. I said it on Twitter. He is their most indispensable player. Give the team MVP award to Kadari Richmond. Sure, because we saw what happened when he's not playing or when he's out with general soreness. But the most indispensable player, all right, the player who you can do without, and I know it sounds contradictory, but it makes sense, okay? MVP, most valuable player, Richmond. Most indispensable, the player who I want on that court and never want to see him off the court is Dre Davis, because I know what he's going to do at both ends of the floor. They need those three players to step up, all right? It begins with those three. When Kadari Richmond, Alamir Dawes, and Dre Davis all produce, Seton Hall wins. That's how they win this game, all right? And don't let Eric Dixon beat you, because that is a guy who loves to play against Seton Hall, okay? That is the key. Limit him defensively. So we'll see. It's all there for Seton Hall, and that's all you could ask at the beginning of the year. They're 18-11, 11-7. If they get to 20 wins and 13 wins in the Big East, a fourth-place finish, how do you deny them an at-large bid? All right, that is Seton Hall. That is UConn. I want to get to the MAC, because we talked about the Northeast Conference with Patrick Sellers. The MAC is just whack, okay? They enter the final week, the final two games, with four teams, four that can win the regular season: Quinnipiac, Fairfield, St. Peter's, and Marist. All of them have an opportunity to win the regular season and finish as the top seed. I'm not going to go over all the scenarios, but Quinnipiac has a one-game lead. They're 13-5. Fairfield and St. Peter's are 12-6. Most likely it will be one of those three. Marist is the long shot at 11-7. All right, they would need too many things to happen. And they blew it when they lost to Iona. All right, so Iona showed some life. They lost Greg Gordon. They were reeling. They had lost three straight games, and they go into Marist, a team who needed that game, a team who's playing really well under John Dunn. And Iona showed me something with a gutsy win on the road. So don't count them out either in the conference tournament. But most likely, Quinnipiac right now controls their own destiny. They win out, they win the regular season. Fairfield and St. Peter's have some work to do, but St. Peter's does play Quinnipiac. All right? If St. Peter's can go into Ryder and win at the Bronx Zoo and then beat Quinnipiac at home at Run Baby Run Arena, St. Peter's could win the regular season. For a team that was picked 10th out of 11 teams, Bashir Mason would be your MAC Coach of the Year. Latrell Reed had an amazing, amazing game and a near triple-double. The lone holdover from Shaheen Holloway's team that went to the Elite Eight, he had 15 points, set a St. Peter's program record with 17 assists and 9 rebounds. 15 points, 17 assists, and 9 rebounds. Let that sink in. Okay? When healthy, they're as good as any team in the league. So you have them going. You have Fairfield, who's still alive at 12-6. It is going to be a wild, wild week in the MAC and something to keep out on, something to keep an eye on. I will be tweeting about them. Of course, follow my guy, Jaden Daly at Daily Dose of Hoops for his MAC reports. It's going to be fun. And let's face it, I don't know if the number one seed means anything in terms of an advantage because of there's no home crowd, right? The games are being played in Atlantic City. What it does is it's all about matchups. You're playing on a neutral court in Atlantic City. You're not dealing with home court advantages like you are in the Northeast Conference. So my point is finishing first in the MAC doesn't mean as much as if you finish first in the Northeast Conference, where if you win all the way, you're playing home games. Here it's on a neutral court, and it's more about the matchups. Because that second and third seed between Quinnipiac, Fairfield, and St. Peter's and Marist, I mean, who knows what's going to happen there, right? But teams that are dark horses, Ryder, they're the hottest team in the MAC. They've won 6 straight games. That's a team that was predicted first in the MAC preseason poll. They took their lumps early on. They started out slow. And now they're hot. Mervyn James had an amazing week, was named MAC Player of the Week for the third time this year. He averaged 22 points and 4 rebounds as Ryder won that all-difficult Western New York trip. They won at Niagara and at Canisius, sweeping both games for the first time in 5 years. So Ryder's won 6 games in a row as they go into their matchup against St. Peter's on Thursday. That team is hot. Iona showed what they can do. Don't count out Niagara. I mean, any one of 6 teams can win the MAC. All right, can Mount St. Mary's pull off an upset? Sure. But, you know, I don't really count out any one of those top 6 teams. You know, Fairfield, Quinnipiac, St. Peter's might be the favorites, but you can't tell me Marist can't win it all. You can't tell me Ryder can't win it all. There's championship talent on those teams. And in a neutral site in Atlantic City, why not? Why can't it happen? So keep your eye on the MAC this week. Obviously, keep your eye on Seton Hall as they play their most important game of the season against Villanova. Will UConn make history? And last but not least, let's not forget about the Ivy League, because Princeton has put themselves in position to be the number one seed in the Ivy League madness. We know the 4 teams. It's Princeton, it's Yale, it's Cornell, and Brown. Those are the 4 teams that have made the Ivy League madness, the Ivy Madness Final 4. What has yet to be determined is the seeding. Princeton controls its own destiny thanks to a huge win over Cornell. They came up big in their last weekend at home in the regular season. Princeton took care of business against Columbia, and then in a game they had to have against Cornell, in a game that knocked Cornell out of a first-place tie, Caden Pierce does what he does, 23 points, 8 rebounds. Xavien Lee had 16 and 10 rebounds. And Matalako, in his last regular season game, his last game period in that building, scored 19 points and goes out a winner. Princeton's big three made the big plays down the stretch. Pierce, Lee, and Alaco as they fought off Cornell 79-77 in a game they had to have. This game was back and forth, 11 lead changes. Both teams had to have it, and now Princeton sits in the driver's seat in the Ivy League. They have now won 8 straight games, and they finish with a perfect 12-0 record at home. That is a senior team, a veteran team, a team that, yeah, they do have excellent underclassmen. Don't get me wrong, right? Because Pierce and if you were putting together an all sophomore team, Xavien Lee and Caden Pierce would make all Americans as sophomores. That's how good this team is. But when you have guys like upperclassmen, like Matalako and Zach Martini, leading this team, doing the little things, doing the things that winning players do, seniors matter. Seniors rise to the occasion. Seniors are the players who do things in crunch time, do things for the team when you need them to do it the most. Martini and Alaco are those guys. Okay, and let's not forget Dalen Davis, all right? The freshman won his second Rookie of the Week honor in the Ivy League, along with Caden Pierce, who picked up his fourth Ivy League Player of the Week, all right? So Princeton sweeping those honors and doing what they needed to do. They are tied with Yale. Yale will play Brown in their final game, so we're going to see what happens over the weekend. Which team will finish first? Because whichever team finishes second will be playing Cornell. All right? Whichever team does not finish first in the Ivy League is at the disadvantage because they will be playing Cornell. So unlike the MAC, the number one seed is oh so important in the Ivy League. So all eyes on the Ivy League this week, on the MAC, the Big East, to see what happens there. This is tournament time. This is March. We are in championship mode, as Dan Hurley likes to say. My thanks to our sponsor, NorthJerseyVipers.com. Check them out if you or your daughter or someone you know wants to play high-level softball from one of the premier softball clubs in New Jersey. Go to NorthJerseyVipers.com. My name is Brian Dinovellis. 100 shows are in the book, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading and sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.